RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time for another health hacks here at RCR. It's Monday morning. I want to welcome back Dr. Emma Sanford, ophthalmologist. We've already had a health hacks chat. That was last year. Emma, great to have you back. How are you doing?
Yeah, really well, Paul. Thanks. It's so nice to be back. Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you back as well. And I remember our last chat. You gave me a lot to think about because we have glaucoma that runs in the family. So I'm ever more vigilant and have been discussing that with other family members since our chat. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
All right. But on this health hacks, diabetic retinopathy, cause, effect, and allopathic and natural solutions. That's the nature of our chat. How do you want to start off talking about this?
I just thought I'd give you a bit of a rundown on diabetes worldwide and then move into the New Zealand statistics and then move into the diabetic retinopathy itself, just to give you a bit of a background of an understanding of the scale of what we're looking at. So in 2021, it's estimated that, you know, over 500 million adults, you know, 20 to 80, are living with diabetes. And 30% of those will have signs of diabetic retinopathy. Now, that can mean anything from a few little broken blood vessels or little clots or, you know, makes no never mind kind of retinopathy to full-blown, sight-threatening, lost their vision, lights right. out kind of scenario.
So lights out, yeah.
Yeah, well, it can get that far. It really can. And, you know, we'll talk about that later on. But only 10% will have the signs of sight-threatening retinopathy. And it's one of the leading causes of blindness in working-age people, which is of interest because, you know, the socioeconomic cost of that is quite significant.
Yeah, I can
so,
imagine.
You know, we know that cataracts tends to be in older people. Glaucoma, okay, it's the slow burn, but it tends to be older, you know, from the age of 40, you're sort of looking down the throat at slight increase in risk, and that sort of becomes accumulative. It's also interesting to say that in high-income countries, the retinopathy, diabetic retinopathy, is the fourth most common cause of moderate to severe visual impairment. Which
is that lifestyle fundamentally?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It gives you those big clues. You go, okay, well, we haven't got all of those terrible diseases that they've got in Africa. They haven't got really early cataracts because of the high UV or whatever else. But on the flip side of that, we've got a lot more diabetes than they have in the rest of the world in the, as far as we like to call ourselves a developed country, because of our diet. Exactly right. Well spotted.
Okay. I don't think you have to be a rocket scientist or an eye scientist to kind of intuit that. Yeah.
And these are the same dots. It's the same breadcrumb trail, pardon the appalling pun, that, you know, I lay every single time I come and talk to you. It's the great in fact, one of my talks, I've got a picture of a guy shooting himself in the head. He's got a pistol wrapped around one of those hot dog buns.
That's
what you're doing, you know, when you have bread as the core of your diet. And it's not just the grains and the carbohydrates, it's all the glyphosate that's loaded into it and it's killing your microbiome. What we're also seeing is a shift towards younger people getting type 2 diabetes. So the youngest lad I've come across, it was 16. He already had type 2 diabetes and gout. So
gout,
you know,
in a 16-year-old.
Yeah, he's headed. Yeah, absolutely. Really, really, really sad.
Yeah, really sad. Was it obvious, you know, looking at the person, this young person that,
I could pick it, yes. Yeah, I mean, okay. You know, his body form was such that that would be something that you'd anticipate, yes.
Yeah, okay,
gout,
gotcha.
A bit of a surprise, but it's part of the same metabolic disorder and the same diet and lifestyle scenario that leads to it, really. So, you know, we're looking at over 200,000 people in New Zealand with diabetes. It's about 5% of the population now, but it's predicted to increase to 7% by 2040.
And there's all those with the resistance, insulin resistance already that
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
Gone over the line of actual diabetes, right? And that's a huge, compared to what you've just said, as we understand from other health hacks, Glenn Davies, et cetera, that's a huge number.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge continuum. So that's where you end up if you don't pull back on your carbs.
Yeah, yeah.
So insulin resistance is also, it's the beginning of most evils, including a lot of insulin-driven and carb-driven cancers. So, you know, your breast, prostate, pancreatic, colon, they are all driven by insulin.
You know, what really gets me, Emma, and this has only come recently to me because of knowledge, is that everyone talks about, you know, worsening statistics in all these areas of health, so-called. But, I mean, we're trying to join the dots. We do join the dots. It's so damn obvious. Yet the urgency, you know, to do the practical things, because they are practical things, they're simple practical things to get ahead of it, aren't really talked about and nothing's done, just saying.
Yes, I find that my impression of government policy and governance are all lost in tiny little whirlpools that aren't connected to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So it's very easy for well-meaning people with some knowledge to take us down oh so many dead ends and then not connecting the dots through the bigger picture. And I think, you know, this is a very, very common problem in the human psyche that we cannot deal with complexity. And but, we certainly don't like uncertainty. And those are things that government does not deal well with at
all. I'm no smart person, really, but it doesn't seem that complex. You know, what is the is the underlying connecting factor?
Yeah.
Okay, high carbs. We know that already. Oh, well, maybe we should look at that. You know, it's anyway, I don't want to get hung up on that for our chat, but that bugs me a lot, that.
I agree. It's oh so simple. It really is. You know, good health and resilience is actually so simple. And I've heard lots of people say, oh, I can't afford to eat that way, da-di-da. But I've also come across many people who are very poor. And when they decide that they're going to eat that way, they realize that they eat less because their nutritional value of their food has gone up. So, I mean, you know, I saw it throughout when I was taking my kids through to, you know, outings with other kids, homeschooling or otherwise, and they would be grazing all day. We'd be stopping every hour and a half, whatever we were doing, so kids could eat. And it would be jam sandwiches and bananas. And my kids were like, oh, it's really boring. We're going to have to wait for everybody to eat. And,
yeah.
You know, from the time they were nippers, they were on three meals a day, lots of lovely vegetables and some animal protein and good quality fats, and they were good to go. And they're lean, mean fighting machines.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not an inch of chub on them. And they are well, they're resilient, and that is quite different from a lot of their friends. And so it, you know, yeah.
And then policymakers and politicians and others say health is a potential black hole. We can't afford to fund everything. I mean, I find that quite insulting to hear that now, because I know that, you know, there are things you can do to stop it being a black hole. Anyway, we digress slightly.
That's the paradigm. You know, it's the put the fire out paradigm instead of, hang on, what's somebody building the fire out of in the first place? It's just a weakness of the ability for understanding complex systems and going back to root causes, which is what integrative doctors are all about. You know, they just don't seem to be able to go back to root causes. It's just a reaction. And you just end up with, you know, the Great Wall of China being built out of elastoplast instead of built out of foundational bricks.
It's a great way of putting it. All right. I think you before I took you off the numbers, we were talking about the numbers.
No problem. This is all really, really relevant and really part of it. You know, it's why we're here, right? It's why we are in diabetic retinopathy. People have been walked into it by, you know, the dietary guidelines that still exist. You know, I think I've said that before as well. So the risk factors for complications of diabetes. So, you know, you can be trucking along and you're keeping your blood sugars relatively okay. You know, you're looking at anywhere from 7 to 9. You might be all right. But, you know, it's, again, it's a slow burn. So a lot of these people have had diabetes for 10, 20 years before they hit the skids of diabetic retinopathy. And it's never too late. But my gosh, there's a lot of damage that's already been done. So actually, your blood sugars 7 to 9 are not as good as you thought they were. They're not the insurance policy that you hope that they might be. And the higher your blood sugars and the more labile they are, the more up and down like a horse draws they are, the more stress you're in, the more problems you have.
Yeah.
High blood pressure. If you've got high blood pressure to go with that, then that increases your complications for diabetes globally across the body, not just the eyes. If you've got also high lipids or dyslipidemia, rather, I should say, because, you know, again, our understanding of cholesterol, or rather modern medicine's understanding and weddedness to their understanding of cholesterol results are erroneous. You know, it's the oxidation level. There are different lipids within those profiles, etc. I won't go down that rabbit hole just yet. And also the duration that you've suffered from diabetes. So the longer you've had it, the more the closer you are to looking at those, you know, complications. And that's why, you know, screening is important. And even, you know, that self-screening, not just going to your GP every whatever it is that frequency to get those things checked. And we know that controlling these risk factors does make a big, big difference to your, you know, bodily complications, you know, black toes, amputated legs, erectile dysfunction, blindness, renal failure, blah. And, you know, you, by controlling them, you can reduce the progression of sight loss or potential sight-threatening complications by 50%.
Well, that's a lot. That's a big number.
It's huge. And, you know, don't you want to be in that space?
Totally.
In the, oh, I'm going for my laser surgery again space?
Yeah.
And the other thing to know is that diabetes and diabetic complications are driven by inflammation. So that's another thing that, you know, we don't tend to tell our patients in the conventional realm of, okay, those things you need to control. And diabetes, because of the sugar products that are attached to your proteins and lipids in your cell membranes in your whole body, that creates inflammation. So, you know, the diabetes itself causes inflammation, and any other inflammation on top of that will drive those complications. So the complications are many, they are numerous, but the sort of top pick are kidney disease. So, you know, a lot of the people who are on dialysis or needing transplants, they are, you know, diabetics. Nerve damage, so that's often in the fingers and toes, but it's actually everywhere. It's just that that's where people are aware of it. Foot ulcers, furring up of the arteries or hardening of the arteries cause arteriosclerosis or atheroma, and that can lead to heart attacks, strokes, emboli, into all sorts of part of the body, and, you know, the sort of the gangrene that people get losing fingers and toes that we talked about earlier. Male and female sexual dysfunction, so inability to have an erection or orgasm. Thyroid disease, that's a threefold increased risk. Tooth decay and gum disease, that's a big one. Depression, a threefold increase. Dementia and cognitive decline.
We have high rates of depression. Faster. Just say. Okay. And dementia. Okay. Yeah.
And if you think about it, it makes sense. So, you know, you're flooding your brain. So all of this insulin resistance, the brain says, I can't deal with all of this sugar, keep it out. The mitochondria start diminishing. In fact, quite a few years ago now, some wonderful person, I can't remember his name right now, coined the phrase type 3 diabetes, you know, the dementia side of the overcarbing. And, you know, these are all comorbidities. So heart attack, stroke, depression, dementia, etc. They are comorbidities. In other words, if you've got diabetes, you've probably got these because they're caused by the same thing.
Not a great life if you've got all of them bunched together. Terrible.
No, no, that's right. Absolutely. Mm. It can be a very, very much diminished joy and engagement with, you know, what is possible for life. So yeah. You're not able to suck the marrow out of life and gain that potential, which, you know, is very, very sad. So the complications in the eyes, many, you know, corneal ulcers, you can work all the way from the front to the back. But, you know, I'm going to focus on the diabetic retinopathy, and that's divided into a number of different sort of subtypes. So diabetic maculopathy is where you've got something going on at the macula, and that is the most sensitive part of the retina for vision. So that's what I'm looking at you now to focus on your face. That's what, for you, you're looking at and seeing the red that I'm wearing.
Yep.
So that's your central vision, your really acute vision, your really acute color vision, reading, writing, watching TV, driving. And it can be leaky blood vessels, or it can be closed blood vessels. So it can be exudative, it can be ischemic. In other words, the blood vessels are closing down and they don't exist anymore. You can get background retinopathy, which a lot of diabetics will have as a matter of course. So there'll be little tiny hemorrhages, tiny little areas where the nerves are distressed and they're showing that distress. And then if you still haven't, you know, got your stuff sorted, you are into the realms of proliferative diabetic retinopathy. And that's when things are getting quite serious now. And that's when, you know, doctors and ophthalmologists will certainly start hopping around and getting a little bit excited.
Okay.
And then you've got your proliferative vitreoretinopathy, where those blood vessels are coming out from the retina and growing into the jelly of the eye, which is a whole nother ball game of horror. And next level treatment is often, you know, required for that. But we'll talk about that later if we've got time. You get earlier onset and more rapid onset of cataract. So if you've got poor diabetic control, you'll be going for your cataract surgery in your 40s and 50s instead of your 70s, 80s, 90s. There's an increased risk of glaucoma up to 36%. That's huge.
Yeah, another big number. Yep.
Again, it's a comorbidity. So, you know, this is something that I'm using for my glaucoma patients, saying, look, cut your carbs. You're going to clean up those pathways for that fluid to drain, and it'll improve your blood circulation at the back as well. And other eye surgeries, so epiretinal membrane is one of those, again, because that's driven by inflammation. So we talked earlier, this is why screening is so important, not least because a lot of people have some of these retinopathies and not realize that they've got it. So, you know, quite a few people have said, oh, you know, it just all happened ever so quickly. And I was like, no, this is just the end piece. This has been actually a work in progress for a long, long time. So screening really is very important. And your optometrist will do that for you. And then there's also a free screening program. And there are certain criteria that we use for entering people into this. And the other thing that's interesting is people are often unaware of when their diabetes started. So then they were diagnosed, blah, blah, blah. But I say, okay, so when do you think it happened? You know, looking back, knowing what you felt like when it was diagnosed, how long do you reckon you've had it? And some people have said up to 5 years.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that's cooking your retina nicely all that time without you realizing. And, you know, we often find that diabetic retinopathy is already present when people are diagnosed. Some of the changes are permanent and there are no symptoms, and sometimes there's no going back. So what's actually happening in the retina? Lots of things. As far as the blood vessels themselves are concerned, there are blood vessels, cells, there are cells lining the blood vessels, but there are also cells outside of that that take care of the blood vessel. They start to die first, and they can't cope with helping and trying to care for the blood vessel. the membrane on which those cells sit become thickened, so goodies can't pass between the blood and the tissue. So it might as well be closed because the tissue's still starved. The capillaries block off and close. Inflammation starts to increase. Then your next step is a distress hormone gets released from the retina and the blood vessels saying, look, I'm short of oxygen. I'm starving here. Give me more. And that stuff helps the body grow new blood vessels when you're in utero. But when we are into adulthood, that hormonal signal just helps us grow abnormal blood vessels. They don't provide any more blood supply. They don't provide more oxygen. They don't provide any more nutrient. They're a nemesis. They're an absolute menace. So these rubbishy blood vessels, they leak, they bleed. They've also got very abnormal connective tissue associated with them. So they create tremendous scarring. And I've seen people where they've got this vitreoretinopathy, and because these blood vessels, these abnormal blood vessels, are starting to scar, they are actually pulling off the retina.
Oh, wow. That's
bundling
quite
it up
dramatic.
Into this horrible little scabby ball in the middle of the eyeball. Yeah, that's it. So this is, you know, if you really are at that level of diabetes, you're in big, big trouble. And by the time these abnormal blood vessels start growing in the retina, because the retina is this beautiful ability to see the circulation of the human body, we also know that that's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, you can look in. It's like a window in, right?
Yeah, that's it. Absolutely wonderful to be able to say, okay, what are you? It's, you know, it's like in traditional Chinese medicine, they take your pulse and look at your tongue. Those are their signs. And, you know, for ophthalmologists and even GPs who care to look, you know, taking a quick look at the retina can tell you an awful lot about somebody. So by the time people have got these abnormal blood vessels, you know that their kidneys are about to fail, if not, you know, they're already. And you know that, you know, their risk profile is much more severe. You know, all of those different complications that we talked about, they've probably got quite a few of them going on already. So we've talked about, I've introduced those different retinopathies generally. So we're going to talk about maculopathy. It is a late complication, 10 to 20 years. People start losing their contrast sensitivity. So, you know, edge detection. So if you're looking at black and white strips of the crossroads, you see really bright white and really dark black. And those boundaries are going to be blurred for those people. They'll notice that their color vision goes straight lines that they're looking directly at might look wavy. So quite a few people have come along saying, oh, I just happen to know the edge of the door or the lines on the middle of the road.
Yeah.
and they'll sometimes be able to detect a black smudge in the center of the vision or off center.
Okay.
So we might find little areas of swelling. We might find one great big juicy area of swelling. And that will help us understand, you know, the severity, the impact on you, you know, where we might go from there. So I've got some pictures for you, Paul. So the back of the eye should be a beautiful sort of salmon orange with these gorgeous blood vessels bifurcating, getting smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, supplying all of that tissue. Where those blood vessels are coming from is the optic nerve head, and that's where the blood vessels come in, and then the venous blood flows out, where the veins get bigger and bigger and bigger and then feed outside of the eye, and that's where the nerves flow down and then enter through into the brain. So you see that sort of speckled white yellow ring?
Yes, I do.
You've got the big blob, if I can use my mouse here.
Yeah.
And then you've got some hemorrhages in the center. They shouldn't be like that. They should look like this. Nice salmon
gosh,
thing.
That really shows up. Folks, if you're listening, take it from me. That is so obvious.
Mm. And that's a couple of centimeters across. That's pretty big.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And then on this example, you've just got a few little exudates. So this is much less severe, but you see these ones are focused around the macula. This is your central vision, what we were talking about before, your very, very fine reading vision, color vision.
Mm-hmm.
So this person will be probably lucky if they get halfway down the chart. They're probably looking at, you know, the really big letters on the chart at the optometrist.
Yep.
Okay. This is a really, this is ischemic diabetic maculopathy. So this is where you've got blood vessels that have literally stopped living, stopped functioning. So you see lots and lots of hemorrhages. That beautiful branching pattern is no longer there. It's very disorganized. And this image on the other side, this is when we've done a dye test and then we've taken some photos. So you see this area here, this is what it should look like. So you've got that sort of gray white of the blood filling the blood vessels and sort of slightly less bright gray in the middle there. That's all the little tiny capillaries being filled by the dye.
Mm-hmm.
And in these areas, you've got, it's moth-eaten, it's black. There's no fluorescein there. This is just absolutely black. So they have lost huge areas of capillary network.
Yeah, it sort of looks like the surface of the moon in a way.
Yeah, right. And if you've got no blood supply, nothing's going to work. Nothing's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah. So this is a blow up of that last picture. So you're also seeing little patches of bright white where it's leaking.
It looks like on that picture there's more altered areas than normal areas.
Yes,
it's a real sort of patchwork of stuff. Yeah.
It's not a very good patchwork because this really big area is right in this person's central vision.
So is that a hole in the vision almost?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That will be quite densely. If we did a field test on somebody, you'd basically see the same shape of blackness represented.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got it.
But, yep. You know, spots that they can't see. So the treatment varies depending on what's going on, and we need to differentiate between whether it's leaky or whether it's ischemic or whether it's a combination of both. So this is where the fluorescein angiogram can be very, very useful because it helps us plan treatment as well as understand the diagnosis. So when we treat you with laser, what we're doing is actually doing a tiny, tiny microscopic thermal burn. And it sounds ironic that, hey, look, I've got enough dead tissue in there. Do you really want to kill some more? But it seems to really zhuzh things up as far as tidy up time in the back of the eye, because you're giving micro trauma and the eye goes, oh, heck, okay, I better get busy. And in responding to that tiny little thermal burn, you increase the metabolic action of the retina to do what it's supposed to do, which is to keep itself lean, mean, and dry, and not have these pockets of fluid and not have these pockets of fat and protein gathered. So it stimulates it. And a lot of times you can deal with all of that leak by doing some very, very light laser. And then if you've got aneurysms, if they're big enough, you can burn those and seal them. It's very cool work. I really love that part of my job so much. It was very, very satisfying to seal aneurysms and then see them, you know, weeks and months later, and all of that horrible fluid had gone, their patch in their vision had gone, or, you know, the vision had returned, you know. But what the soul destroying thing was that I was seeing the same crowd. You know, through the years I was there, it was like, oh, it's you again. What are your blood sugars? Oh, the same. Okay, well,
yeah, no
here
change.
We are again then.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right, exactly.
Groundhog day.
And, you know, to be fair to them, this is 10 and 20 years in the making. So even if they do clean up their act and just, you know, do everything that is required, those blood vessels are compromised. But, you know, we do know that it does make a difference even late in the piece. It's never too late. And then in some people, we might also give an injection into the eye, which combats that hormone, that VEGF hormone. So we also give that same injection for the age-related macular degeneration because it's the same hormone that's being released.
Yeah, I think my father had that treatment, actually.
That's it. Yeah, we talked about that before.
Yeah,
so
I remember him
sometimes
saying.
We'll do a combination of both. And no, if the swelling's really juicy, then the laser is not going to reach the layer of the eye that we need it to reach. So we might do some treatment around the edges and then give the VEGF for the anti-VEGF for the real juicy bit. But, you know, that will be designed by your ophthalmologist. They'll know exactly what they're doing with regards to that. And you can help them by getting your inflammation under control, getting your blood sugars under control. You know, upholding your end of the bargain really helps your ophthalmologist. So the response is slow. It can take months for it to finally disappear. So we will follow you up, you know, three months, 6 months, etc. There is another sort of laser called sub-threshold laser where we are using, it's a different technique, but it's basically the same thing. We are creating a tiny little bit of damage, but it's to a specific layer. And it means that the layer of the eye that captures the light that actually does the seeing in the first place, we don't get the thermal damage to that they die as well. But that's also the trick with argon. You can be really heavy and you'll see that little pepper pot of laser spots for the rest of your life, you know, when we examine you. Or if you're really subtle, if you've got a good operator, then those burns will be so subtle that your pigment epithelium will recover and you won't see little pepper pot scars, as it were, at the back of the eye.
So you want a good operator there.
You do want a good operator. You want somebody who's prepared to be conservative, but also somebody who's not afraid to go hard or go home if required.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah. So, you know, having a good relationship and communicating with your ophthalmologist is really, really crucial. So, yeah, there are a bunch of other things available, but they're very uncommonly available here. We have got 2RT laser in the country, and that is a beautifully subtle way of doing things. That was actually invented by Professor John Marshall. He was my professor in St. Thomas's.
Okay.
I was quite surprised to see his name on that, and I made contact with him when I found out that he was the inventor of this. I think it was patented in 2005. Yeah, so clever man, good man. You can also inject the eye with steroids. That is a way of combating your inflammation, but it also shrinks down leaky blood vessels. It sort of tightens up sick blood vessels or normal blood vessels that are just being distressed. They're doing what they're supposed to do. They're leaking. So the steroid will just calm things down. And then you've got the anti-VEGF and you may need laser as well. So we're moving into another sort of retinopathy now, which is all of these leaky spots, bleeding spots, you know, arteries not looking very happy, veins looking not very happy. And it looks pretty ugly. Instead of that beautiful segment that I showed you before, you know, you got these smudges of bleeding and little spots of yellow leak. You got a bit of a moth-eaten vein there. You know, it's just looking a bit sad. Your proliferative diabetic retinopathy, that's what we were talking about earlier with those abnormal blood vessels that leak and bleed. And when they leak and bleed, it can be catastrophic. It can be a humongous bleed, and then that scars in the retina and, you know, it's not very good. So it is quite serious. And to get onto them quickly is really important because they can run amok.
We're just coming up on time, Emma. We're always under pressure here at RCR now because we've got so much going on. It's what I'm telling people now. It's not as luxurious as it used to be on time. So how do we sort of sum things up?
Yeah, no problem at all. I'll just go on to say that when you're looking at something like that, you need a man with a knife and then you're into surgery. So you can see how this just escalates.
Yeah.
So if you don't deal with your carbs, your vegetable intake, your good quality animal fats, your good quality protein, lots of culinary spices, then, you know, you're going to end up in big trouble. And it can be reversed and it can be treated.
You might not be prepared for this, but I mean, Dr. Google is one thing. Is there any good website to go, maybe your point of contact, whatever, for people to, you know, really go back on some of the things in more detail that you've talked about and go through the whole thing? What do you suggest people do to empower themselves with the information that they need? Maybe even before, you know, thinking about going and making a visit to someone like yourself.
Well, I think it's, you know, information is power. Go and see your optometrist. If they refer you to an ophthalmologist, go see them. Talk to them. See what stage you're at. See what's required. And then get busy. And, you know, see somebody like me or Glenn, or a lot of integrative doctors will tell you, you know, cut your carbs, increase your good animal fats, your good quality animal protein, you know, same story. Yeah. And then, you know, if you need herbal assistance, it's not going to be herbal assistance to control your diabetes. You just do that by what you put in your mouth. The herbs are there and the supplements are there to fortify that retina and make those blood vessels happy again.
Really good to have you back. So interesting. Oh, man. Dr. Emma Sanford, ophthalmologist for our health hacks this week here at RCR. Thank you, Emma, for coming back.
You're welcome. Sorry it got a bit heavy, but I hope that, you know, it was of value anyway.
Hey, sometimes we got to go there. Sometimes we got to go there.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.